Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome to Sports Day. It's great to have your company. Our number is 133-882. Anything that's on your mind in the wonderful world of sport, doesn't matter what sport it is, we'll be right across it here on this program. Paul Hazelby, how are you today?
What a day, Carl. I don't think I've experienced such a day. There's been so many twists and turns throughout the day, particularly over there in South Australia. But we will push on. We've got a big show. Jacob Wedham will join us a bit later from the Kookaburras. He's over there in Tokyo, in the village. Jeremy Sharp, the East Frio product. He's the recent Rising Star winner. And also Matt McAldon will join us a bit later.
They will, and I can tell you this, that I'll be interested to ask Jake about the march as to whether the opening ceremony, they'll be allowed to do that, and whether the Aussies and any other athletes for that matter, and what he knows around that scenario, and also the COVID cases and how locked down they are actually in the athletes' village right now.
I wouldn't go. If I was an athlete right now, I wouldn't go anywhere near anybody else, because if you're near somebody that gets COVID, you're gone. You're done. Your four-year campaign, five-year campaign is done and dusted. I'll be staying in my room and just going out when I needed to.
Cody Waitman, a couple of years at the Western Bulldogs on the back of his very good form. Travis Boak playing his 300th game. That might be at a location that he didn't necessarily want to play at, because by the looks of it, it's going to be played at Marvel Stadium. A man who has been working on South Australian radio tonight with Kimbo. They work in Drive on SCN, and of course he writes very informative articles in the Advertiser's. Michelangelo Rucci, and he joins us off the top here on Sports Day. Welcome to the program, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm not too bad at all, and I think I'll do this proviso. Whatever I say now might be changed in 5 minutes. That's the sort of day it's been. By the end of this interview, what we said at the beginning may no longer be relevant.
So when I, and just to put this into context for those people that have been toiling away at work today, it's not been a day for play here in Perth, Rooch. We've had so much rain, mate, and we've got rain forecast for the rest of this particular week. In fact, we might have rain every day for this whole month, the way it's been going. But going back to what's unfolded over there in South Australia, this morning I got up and I was looking at some vision of what looked like Port Adelaide and Adelaide players who had packed up and heading to the airport to head out, only to be told to stay and remain, and the showdown's now going to be played there in Adelaide, only to be told later on today that they had to be shipped out to Victoria. What happened?
It's been that sort of day. So at 10 a.m. Adelaide time, the Premier and the Chief Health Officer put us into lockdown from 6 p.m. this evening. So we're in our third lockdown, although the second one was pretty much a mini one. But anyway, this is our third. At that stage, we were unsure just what it meant, because when we had all hit, you know, our pillows the night before, we knew Port Adelaide was playing Collingwood, Adelaide was playing Hawthorn. We were going to have a rare event of back-to-back games at Adelaide Oval. But now we've gone through a day of whereby mid-afternoon, the Port Adelaide and Adelaide players were told to pack their bags and deliver them to their footy clubs, where they would eventually get on a bus and fly out at 4 to Melbourne. And just before 4 o'clock, they were told, go home, to the point whereby we interviewed Zach Butters tonight and he was walking his dog in a park. So by the time he finished the interview, he was told, well, now you're flying out to Melbourne at 9 p.m. In between, we have seen Adelaide go in the space of 36 hours from playing the Western Bulldogs to playing Hawthorn to playing Port Adelaide to now playing Hawthorn again. So at this point, we know that Port and Collingwood in Travis Boak's 300th game will be in the Docklands on Friday night. And Adelaide will play Hawthorn, if again, in the Docklands on Saturday evening after the North Melbourne-Carlton game. And that could all change again tomorrow. But what's pretty clear is the Crows and Port Adelaide players will be out of Adelaide in 1 hour and 20 minutes. And we have no clue as to when they're returning. So I'm almost at the point of beginning to wonder if they'll play another game in Adelaide this year. So, and they've still got a showdown to play, which was due in round 21. It was the 50th derby between the two fierce South Australian rivals, and it may be one of those games that finishes in Perth or could finish in Brisbane. We live by the minute at the moment.
It seems strange, Rooch, that teams are going into Melbourne given their cases are higher than that of South Australia, but clearly it's on the back of your government over there not allowing those teams to be able to train and play. How long do you think that will persist for?
Well, that's the key issue, that they weren't going to be allowed to train. So the first thought was get them into Melbourne where they could train and then fly them back. But the thought now that Adelaide's in lockdown, the borders will be shut pretty tight, and we're we're hearing the case numbers will get pretty high shortly. So that's why I don't imagine they'll be coming back for a long, long time. They've been told to pack for 5 weeks. That takes them to the end of the home and away series. At that stage, Adelaide will be packing up and thinking what happened in 2021, and Port Adelaide will be in a final series wondering where they're going to play any of their finals, because we're just living in a zone of complete confusion.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? And Port Adelaide, they had the choice to play, I think, the game at the MCG and Marvel Stadium. They chose Marvel Stadium. Are you surprised by that, given they have to go to the MCG? And like our clubs here, you don't get many opportunities to play at the MCG, particularly that's where the grand final is going to be played at this particular stage.
Yeah, it'll be interesting when we'll speak to Ken Inkley on Thursday to actually find out why they preferred Marvel to the MCG. It's interesting because Marvel hasn't always been a great track for Port Adelaide. They've had some horrible results there. Now, whether it's just simply a case of not Collingwood's home ground and keeping it in an environment whereby they feel they played there last week, they know what they're dealing with, keep it all the same. It might have been much of a muchness for them anyway. So, it's an interesting choice. And I'll be intrigued as to why Ken Inkley chose Marvel rather than the MCG.
Robbie Gray, Warren Treadray, a couple of the legends of the Port Adelaide Football Club, but Travis Boak has to be right at the top of the tree. In your opinion, who is the top Port Adelaide player? Because he plays game 300. We speak a lot about David Mundy over here playing game 350, yeah. But Travis Boak, geez, he's been a wonderful player.
Yeah, we've always got to be careful with Port Adelaide because it is a club that extended out from the Sandville. It wasn't a club that was just made up one day in 1997. And at a time when Russell Ebert, who's a four-time McGarry medalist, is in a fair battle for his life as he has a blood cancer at the moment, we shouldn't, ignore what he did in his time before the AFL. So he is universally Port Adelaide's most loved player at number one. When you get to the AFL era, well, you've got quite a debate that goes on there. It's clearly, Warren Treadray had an enormous career there. Robbie Gray's having still a great career. But what has to be said about Travis Boak is where he stands in terms of his legacy at Port Adelaide. Is this football club was on its knees in 2012 to the point whereby the licence that they had to play in the AFL could have easily been ripped up. They needed Travis Boak to actually commit to play to Port Adelaide rather than go to Geelong, particularly after Joel Selwood, Chris Scott and the brass band came to Adelaide that time in July 2012 to convince him to come back to Torquay and play for Geelong. The fact that Travis Boak signed on, became captain, set up what their culture is, encouraged so many other players to get on board with the Ken Hinckley program that became so successful at the beginning, tells you what his legacy is. He was the man who kept Port Adelaide from turning out the lights at Alberton.
Yep, unbelievable. He's been a great player. Just some other news around out-of-contract players from the Adelaide Crows. Tom Lynch and Matt Crouch, are you expecting any movement there?
And Daniel Talia is the other one. That's the other interesting one. He's out of contract as well. Now, Daniel Talia needs to prove that he's medically sound to play next year. He's had a horrendous year and he won't play any football this year after all the injuries he's had. If he's medically fit, I would imagine he gets a one-year contract at Adelaide. Matt Crouch is another interesting one. He's just made a comeback to Sandville footy. He could probably get a better deal at another club, and I don't think Adelaide can afford to lose him when you have a look at what their midfield's all about. Anyone who saw them play West Coast know they've got major issues in the midfield. So it's going to be interesting how it plays with free agency with him. Tom Lynch, if you know what he means to that football club, what he means in the change rooms, what he's got to offer in the future, particularly as he looks at coaching, I'm absolutely staggered that he wouldn't get at least a one-year deal at Adelaide. I know they've got to rejig that forward system. They've got to get younger players in there, but I wouldn't be letting Tom Lynch out of my clubhouse when he's got so much to offer.
Wholeheartedly agree. I just can't believe that they want to pigeonhole all of these older blokes when you consider Geelong just goes and picks them up and look at them rolling along quite nicely with a very aged football team, the oldest in the competition right now. They're at the right end of the competition. Hey, Rooch, thanks very much for your time tonight, mate. We really appreciate it. Take care.
And as I say, wash your hands.
Yeah, and get the jab. That is the best advice that we can give here on the program. So co-host with Kimbo, Rooch and Kimbo, you can hear if you head over to Adelaide on 5AA. Great to have a yak to him. Just some of the other news headlines for Polaris, Australia's number one off-road vehicle brand. Courtney Newborn has signed with our Perth Glory W League. 20-year-old, couple of seasons with Western Sydney, a goalkeeper. So looking forward to welcoming her to town. And the Perth Glory returned to their pre-season training on Friday at Scotch College. Let's hope it's not underwater, Hayes.
And you just come in from the West Coast Eagles. Luke Shuey named for 2 weeks with that calf strain. So there you go.
All right, get Ranger confidence for the price of a quad. You visit your local Polaris dealer today. But if you'd like to join us after this, you can. 133-882. Should the AFL season be postponed? What's your thoughts?
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, drive car of the year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to the program. 133-882. Nearly did it, Hayes. 133-882. The text line 0487-999-882, or if you'd like to get involved on the social media, at Sports Day WA is the way that you can make contact with us there, Hayes.
Rowan Marshall, of course, he won't play for St Kilda. He's gone into 14-day quarantine for being at a COVID hotspot at a hotel. And the West Coast Eagles, Carl, they had a real near miss coming back from South Australia. Of course, our Premier today announced that anybody travelling back in today would have to quarantine for 14 days. Normally we see that backdated, but luckily for them, that's not the case and they can continue.
So tell me what makes sense of this. So Rowan Marshall goes to a T1 exposure site. So does Josh Dunkley. Rowan Marshall and Josh Dunkley both play on the weekend. But because they were already playing by the time that those exposure sites were actually revealed, it meant that they had already exposed all of their teammates and all of the opposition players to then become, as far as the way I see it, so then why aren't all of those teammates and all of those opposition players then not close contacts? Because for the same reason Toby Green and Callum Mills didn't play, they had to sit out and watch. How does that work? I mean, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of inconsistency right there.
Look, I think they've been in tier one areas. So if it's seen as a tier one, then they have to obviously quarantine. But the close contacts of those tier one or the people that have been in tier one don't have
to. But does that
to.
Make any sense?
So, no, it doesn't. So because if they had it, then they're in trouble. But the only thing I would say is the testing done by the AFL and all the players and the clubs. Like, they would have been tested 3 times since that time. And, you know, our government today, I reckon they would have thought about that situation long and hard. And I know they did. But then they allowed them to obviously go out and train today and they will continue on and play. But there is some people that would be coming back from, you know, South Australia that would be angry that they were over there for the weekend. They arrived back in this morning. They go into a 14-day lockdown and the West Coast Eagles came back just a day and a half earlier and they're allowed to play. There's inconsistencies everywhere, but that's just the world we live in at the minute.
It is the world we live in. But at the same time, I want to ask you the question, why Victoria? Why do we have a situation where the Port Adelaide and Adelaide football clubs are flying into Victoria and they have a growing number of COVID cases in that community? Now, these players are going to be, I'm assuming, locked down in whether it's a resort or a hotel, and whilst they'll be allowed to train and go back to that hotel, there's still going to be people that are going to have to feed them and do all those other things. And, you know, you heard Rooch talking about Zach Butters. He was just out walking his dog. I mean, are they going to be allowed to go out and just walk around with masks on? I mean, how does it work over there in Victoria at the moment? Because I thought they were actually in a full lockdown and they still talk they're expecting to actually have fans at the footy and they're talking about making it only available for those that have had a COVID jab. But who's going to serve them the food and who's going to do all of the other things that would be required to make it all happen?
Look, I don't know all the details of it. I just think the Victorian government and the AFL are quite close. Like,
oh, really?
That's the biggest sporting body, obviously, in Victoria. And we know how much they love their footy and the tourism a lot of the time comes from that relationship between the AFL and the Victorian government. So I think they're in cahoots and I think they would be satisfied that the Victorian government aren't going to stop the players from training and also playing. And I don't think the AFL has the same relationship with South Australia and also Western Australia. And that's the evidence today that in South Australia, on the back of five new cases, that those teams weren't allowed to train and then also play. We don't know how that long that is going to last. There's also a cost factor with it, that you could transfer all the teams to here or there, or, you know, you just a week ago you would have transferred all the teams to South Australia and then this has reared its ugly head over there. So there's a bit to play out. The relationship between our government and also the AFL, I think, plays a part, that there's uncertainty around that, and that becomes a logistical nightmare. I'm not sure right at this point in time the AFL would have done enough work to allow 18 or so 16 other teams to come into Western Australia and be hotelled in a safe environment, because they didn't do it last year, and that amount would be maybe too much for our state to take in, given that many of those hotels with school holidays that have just taken place might have had people in them.
Yeah, but I still think that we could at least cater for half a dozen. Mm. It doesn't have to be the whole competition, but maybe the tyranny of distance is something that's too much to bear.
The other point I'd like to make is the cost to put on a game here at Optus Stadium and what the break-even amount is. Like, even if you come over here and actually have 20,000 fans, yes, it's great, fans get the opportunity, it's a better spectacle, but does that actually mean the AFL make more money when you take away all the flights and the accommodation to actually get all those teams over here? Well, if the break-even's only 20, let's be honest, we're only getting 30 and 35.
Well, it's better than no one at the MCG and Marvel Stadium. I mean, surely there's ongoing costs there. I mean, the MCG holds 100,000 and no one can go.
Yeah, depending on the relationships. I know Metricon would be a lot cheaper than opening up Optus Stadium, in my opinion. Now, the MCG might be different, but the relationship the AFL have with them, I don't know the financials with that. But I think the AFL would be considering all of those things, and right now they're not willing to relocate those teams.
Before, and I want to have a chat about the Olympic Games after the break, but before we do that, it's been revealed that the AFL is revising the industry's finances. Obviously, there's been some huge extra costs over the last few weeks with hotels and quarantining and charter flights and all of the other bits that goes with it. There is some uncertainty as to what the salary cap, exact salary cap, or the soft cap figures will be for next year, Hayes. But it's understood, and just reports on Fox Footy tonight, that on Wednesday, being earlier today, last Wednesday, the teams were told that it was around 250 to 500,000.
So an increase up of 250 to 500 next year was the planned number?
Yeah, in the soft cap. And that before COVID, football departments were spending around $9 million. And there are a few that were jumping up and down, including our two clubs here. Sydney, Geelong, Collingwood were a few of those clubs that were lobbying for $1 million plus to increase in the soft cap. What do you think it would make much difference as to whether you had one coach or six coaches at an AFL club?
Not a hell of a difference to the end product. I think the game would still be the game and we'd love it. There'd probably be less emphasis on defensive structures, but certainly to the teams and the players, they would feel it because they've gone from having coaches in all departments helping them out and the medical support that comes with that. I think that's the one that's really hurt the players and the clubs a fair bit, is the medical and the doctors that aren't there as much. But in terms of the spectacle, I don't think it has a big impact on that. But look, the AFL don't want to give out too much certainty around the salary cap next year because you just don't know through this period and what damage is going to be done financially. And it makes it hard for clubs because they want to plan around contracts. There has been some talk, Carl, about the AFL coaches' salary being outside of that soft cap, but I don't think all the clubs are too keen to hear that. And I think Fremantle want more certainty around what that means too for them and their decision-making on Justin Longmuir and maybe a contract extension for him. So it's difficult, but one thing I do know is I think the AFL have been vindicated by going hard last year by reducing the soft cap by the $3 million. And I know clubs are frustrated with it. West Coast Eagles have been frustrated and some of those clubs you mentioned. But given the uncertainty of what was to come and what's happened, I think the AFL got it spot on. They acted swiftly. They got it done. And it hasn't changed the end product for me. The game is still the game.
133882. Paul in Gosnells joins us. G'day, Paul.
G'day, boys. So this isn't what I rang about, but those coaching crews, they were getting out of hand, hey? So
correct.
There was just way, way, way too many people involved, and there was just like a massive gravy train and a lot of mates involved, and it was just ridiculous when you consider the price of memberships and money that was wasted on that. But what I was ringing about is St Kilda are here right now, and Fremantle are scheduled to play St Kilda in round 23. is there any merit in just adjusting the fixture a little bit and keeping St Kilda here and playing Fremantle St Kilda next weekend?
Yes, there is. There's a lot of merit in it. It would be common sense. Yep. But, mate, what we haven't seen, Paul, too often is common sense, mate.
No, but you've got to consider all the other machinations about who was playing and whether they haven't played the other team that misses out because of that. It's quite difficult. We did have three games brought forward, but that also coincided with three teams that were able to do that. So it's a challenge for the AFL, and then you've got to factor in, you know, where the teams are going to be and can they get into different states because of the government controls. I don't think it's just as easy as they're here and let's get it done. But it may happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, we could just play round 23 next week, hey. It's just like bring the whole round forward and swap it all around.
Yeah, but it might not work for the other teams, though.
Well, why could it not work? I mean, if you go to round 20, right? So this week, next week, St Kilda play Carlton. Now two Victorian teams. Why can't you just move the St Kilda Carlton game?
So right? Who's Carlton going to play?
Well, they still play St Kilda, but they don't play them until round 23. So you just flip the two fixtures over. So Frio's fixture, so St Kilda would play a home game against Carlton in round 23.
Who would Carlton play this week?
No, we're talking about
next week.
Yeah, but you're just talking about flipping the fixture completely over. So I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so they're due to play North Melbourne. And if that doesn't correspond with North Melbourne due to play a team that they haven't played already, then it becomes a logistical nightmare.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay. I get your point. It's something that we'll have to just keep on working through.
Deserves a pay rise.
That's why we're not doing the fixtures. 28 minutes to 7. Our number is 133-882. Want to turn your attention to the Olympic Games when we come back. Also a dig. Dial before you dig the first essential step. If you want to have a dig at someone, something, anything that you'd like to get off your chest, you can do that after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento. Drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Any calls that you'd like to roll in, if you want to have a dig, don't dig yourself into a hole. Lodge a free dial before you dig inquiry, 133-882. Want to talk, as I said, a little bit about the Olympic Games in a moment. In fact, I just want to throw it out there to you. What do you most look forward to about the Olympic Games? Will you be one that watches the opening ceremony? We're going to have a chat a little bit later on tonight to Jake Wetton, who's part of our Kookaburras lineup, and we'll find exactly what it's like in the village there in Tokyo, because that's where he'll be joining us from tonight. Let's go to Jim down in Secret Harbour. G'day, Jim.
Hey, Barry. How are you, mate?
Good.
I'm sort of just jumping in about the fixture as well. I just was having a little bit of a listen to Jerry Wakely on A360, and he throws up a different hypothesis every night, does Jared. And his latest one is that Victoria become a hub for the whole 18 teams. But then he threw in that all the finals be played in Perth, which to me, you know, didn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't think Mr. Premier would be very happy about all that. But I can't see why, like, for the next few weeks, the Eagles and the Dockers can't stay in WA with them finishing up playing each other, bring the Derby round 24 forward. I mean, I think Melbourne are due to come to play the Eagles. Richmond are due to play Frio in the coming weeks. Bring them two teams here after the next weekend. Let them play the Derby. Then if we have to go over and spend some time in Victoria, then so be it. But I think there should be minimum disruption. I know Essendon's copped the pineapple at the moment, but geez, we copped the pineapple at the start of the year last year as well.
Yeah, I think we'll keep playing footy here in Western Australia for as long as our government permits. And right now, I don't see any reason why that would change. We've got St Kilda that's been able to come in. Last week, we had North Melbourne, and the week before, and we had Geelong that have come in. So that will continue, I think, until the end of the season.
Look, for me, I just don't understand why the West Australian government doesn't want to form a relationship with the AFL to actually make it a little bit easier whilst following all of the right protocols and everything that has to transpire to make it happen. Because I think for the entertainment that it provides for people that unfortunately might not be able to go to work or are locked up in their homes, hotel rooms, it actually gives them a release and something to look forward to, particularly if you're an avid fan, of which there are millions and millions of Australian rules football fans around this country. So that's the reason why I'd advocate. And also, doesn't it give us an opportunity to promote our state like we saw with Queensland? And I think that what we got is a really good idea of what it can do for us with the Dreamtime game only a few weeks ago between Richmond and Essendon. I think that that actually opened a few people's eyes, or at least I hope it did. And I do hope that, you know, the idea that Jared put forward on AFL 360 on Fox, that it actually does come to fruition, because, you know, I think it's logical to actually, whether you're moving sides to a place that's safer is, I think, and letting them try and live as much as what is a normal life whilst serving whatever period of time has to be set to make sure that everything is adhered to. But, yeah, I would just rather see something like that unfold than to see it being operated on a willy-nilly basis at the moment, which it unfortunately currently is.
I think we could facilitate finals, no doubt. There's the stadium you've got to consider as well. How many games can be played across the weekend on that? So definitely the finals could occur with no more than two games played, or four games really in the first week. But maybe they could be split over that bye. There's a few things to consider there. But I think all the AFL players now and clubs should be shutting things down in terms of movement of their players. And you talk about them going out into the environment. So I think, you know, it, right now they should just be almost in a bubble. And they haven't been in the same bubble like they were last year, Carl. Even when it first occurred, COVID, they were all in their own bubble. They couldn't go home. Their families really had to be careful of where they went and where they ventured. But right now, we've had the players that went to the event. And look, there was no rules in place. But I think maybe the AFL got it wrong and should have been a little bit harder with the restrictions on AFL players.
Go to Spudshed. You can download the free Spudshed app. You can sign up and you can start saving at Spudshed by doing that. You can save a spud load. The savings are amazing by doing that. Hey, when it comes to the Olympic Games, Hayes, have you been an avid follower of the Olympic Games? Has it been something that has drawn in your attention? Are you someone that likes to sit back and watch the opening ceremony, although this opening ceremony is going to be vastly different to anything that we've seen before, with no crowds? And still, I think at this point, and it'll be interesting to find out very soon with our live interview with Jake Whetton tonight from the Athletes Village, as to whether he knows as to whether he will be, along with his team, allowed to march. But is it something that you've nailed yourself to the couch for? And have you been in part of the environment over the years?
Look, not the opening ceremony. That doesn't intrigue me too much. Of course, the Australian one did, going back to Sydney, because it is based around our culture. But this one's going to be very different with no crowd. I don't think it's going to have the same impact. But I can only go back to my childhood, and I used to stay up all night to watch many of the Olympics and the great moments, the Kieran Perkins moments, going back in time. They were fantastic. And, of course, the Sydney Olympics. I rue not going to the Sydney Olympics, Carl. I was 17, 18, just finished my first season of AFL. And for some reason, I didn't go. My teammate Anthony Grover went and had the best time of his life. I decided not to go. I should have went. 2008, though, I did get the chance to go to the Beijing Olympics. And to this day, it's the greatest moment that I've had in my life. It was just fantastic to see elite athletes go really hard for what they love, and the passion around that and the heartbreak that comes with it, but also the enjoyment. The social element was pretty good over there as well in Beijing, going with three other mates. We had a great time, and that was when I did my knee. So it was actually through the footy season. But I really want my kids to sit down and watch it, because I feel maybe as a country we're just losing a little bit of love for the Olympic Games. For whatever reason, I think it's not as big as what it once was. The build-up to this one has been very strange, and maybe that has contributed to it. But I want my kids to understand the importance of these athletes dedicating their lives to their chosen sport and doing it, performing it, on the biggest stage. I think that's a massive thing.
Yeah, I was lucky. I got to run with the Olympic torch up Hampton Road in Freo.
Would have been special, yeah?
Yeah, it was magnificent. I then got the opportunity to call all the cycling action. And the only thing was obviously live at the velodrome. So that was all the indoor racing. And then when the road race was actually on, I had to actually call it from a studio, which is predominantly how most of the Olympic Games.
You have to, don't you? Road race. You can't be everywhere.
That's right. But it's predominantly now how things have evolved into every other sport. And it's become normal. A lot of us are doing it calling AFL off TVs. But most of the commentary team for the Tokyo Olympic Games are going to be based in a studio like it was for the Tour de France with the cycling and so on. When it comes to that event, is all going to be based over there. So I'd just be intrigued, though, as to what have been people's favourite Olympic moments and those that really stick out in their mind. Like you said straight off, it was Kieran Perkins. I mean, for me, and this is very easy to remember, but I mean, the full body suit was something that was very interesting and Cathy Freeman I'm talking about, but to then see her achieve what she achieved with the pressure of a whole nation on her shoulders was just exemplary. And I know she's been spoken about in glowing terms before, but to see that and be part of it was just unbelievable. And the feeling that erupted around it was awesome and something that I'll never forget. 133-882, give us your Olympic moments, as we are only a couple of days away from the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. Just to change tack, because I think we've spoken about COVID enough. We'll try and keep it on the track, on the field. What has been something that you remember about the Olympic Games in your lifetime? Call us now on 133-882. Back soon.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento. Drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Your favourite Olympic moments. A couple of my moments don't actually involve Australian athletes, Hayes, because I've always wanted to see the very best compete. But insane, or Usain, mate, it's incredible how fast some of these blokes run, but he just made it look so easy, to the point where it sort of bordered on arrogance how confident that he was when he ran. And to run the speed that you have to run to win that particular event is just unbelievable.
And he never looked strained, did he, with his technique? He was just cruising and relaxing. Now, he was a bit concerned. I was just reading an article before about the possibility now, I think all of the foot makers, or the shoemakers, what do you call them?
Reebok and Nike and all those? Yeah.
Yeah. So all
so
of
manufacturers?
Them, manufacturers, that's it. So they've all been given the opportunity now to create different shoes. And there's a concern that they're going to get quicker speeds based on some of the technology that has come in. And we've seen some of the times, particularly in marathon running, that have been improved on the basis of the shoes that they've been using. So he's concerned that he could lose his world records on that basis, because when he was running, there weren't allowed to be any changes made to what they already had.
Now,
like the swimsuits, I guess.
Do you know this name, or are you too young? Eric Musambani?
Yeah, Eric the Eel.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a great moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, because at that point, I mean, obviously he'd got nowhere near a qualifying time, but it was all about inclusion. And, you know, that's what these games were all about. And, you know, going back many, many years, obviously it was just open to amateurs, but now professionals are allowed in, which is something that sort of disappoints me in some ways a little bit. But to see that sort of a moment was very special, and to see him get out there, and the love and just the crowd and the atmosphere that, you know, exuded through. I mean, I only watched it on television, but something, again, that I'll never forget.
What about the most heartbreaking moment for you? What about the walker, the Australian walker? Do you remember her name coming into
the stadium?
The stadium. That was heartbreaking. Leading, given the card, Olympic dream over.
Yeah, that was one moment.
What was her name?
There was a couple of others that actually fell over as well, and then other athletes couldn't. Obviously, their day was over as well. But it was about getting them to the finish line, and I mean names are something that escapes me right now, because we're talking about some international athletes here that didn't necessarily involve Australia. But certainly from that perspective, there has been some great little feats of sportsmanship that I can remember right there. Duncan Armstrong, when he shocked the world at Seoul in 1998, was, I think, another very, very significant moment. And I think one that will bring back memories for a lot of people.
Jane Saville.
She was the one that got red carded.
Yeah.
She's not the only one that's ever got red carded either, by the way.
That's a strange sport, that one, too, to actually determine.
Technique-wise... Yeah. Like, you look at some of them sometimes, you think, mate, there's no way that they're actually walking. I mean, they have to be running there. But in the end, Thorpe doing what he did at Sydney in 2000, I think that, like Cathy, that was a significant victory at that particular time for him. And, to be able to get to the number of Olympic Games that he was able to do, I think was exceptional too. Shane in Mandurah wants to join in. G'day, Shane.
Yeah, good evening, guys. When I was a young boy living in Mandurah, my parents made me watch Shane Gould complete at the Olympics. And I got to watch this young West Australian Australian teenager beat the world.
Well, yeah. I don't know that we can claim her, can we? I mean, she she's from Sydney in New South Wales. That's at least where she was born, and she went to Turramurra High School. I don't think she was Western Australian. She went to the Victoria University as well. So, no, I'm not going to claim her as West Australian. But what you do recall is what she achieved at Munich, and she won 3 gold medals, a silver medal in the 800 metres. So the 200-metre freestyle, 400 freestyle, 200-metre medley gold medals, silver in the 800-metre freestyle, and in the 100-metre freestyle picked up a bronze medal as well. So 5 medals at 1 Olympic Games. Very good effort, Shane.
No, it's just amazing.
Yeah, very, amazing. Very good. Yep. Good on you, mate. Thanks for your call. Craig's in Kinross. G'day, Craig.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah. I'm going back to the 2000 Olympics as well. I managed to get over there, watched First Stars Athletics or Wilson Kipketer run. But my moment was that Games, the 10K with Hal Gebliasi and Sergat. The last 400 metres was just unbelievable, and Gebliasi held just about every record from 1600 to 10K for a very long time. He was a champion.
Gabra Selassie, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. He was an athlete, and I remember that finish. It was one of the greats of all time, and he dominated that sport for such a long period of time. But hopefully some of our Australians, we're catching up in some of the long-distance runs. We had Craig Mottram for a while, but even this time around, McSwain's going to be right up there in the 1,500. He can also do the 5,000 and the 10,000. So we have progressed a long way longer distances.
Gabra Selassie, like, mate, he was sprinting at the end.
Yeah.
Mate, he was still beating me over the last 100, mate. It was unbelievable. And he looked like when he finished that
still
he
still beat you. That's correct, isn't it?
over the last 100, still would have beaten me. And the thing was, is that, mate, the bloke wouldn't have blown out a candle.
Well, you would have beaten me, so I guess he would have flogged me then.
No, I don't know that I would have beaten you, mate. Oh, you've seen me play on that fast.
That's why they try and hurt him,
so slow him down a bit. It is 5:27. We need to clear a commitment. On the other side, we will come back and tell you what's coming up after the 7 o'clock news. And don't forget, here at Optus Stadium, since 1882, cricket test rivalry has been very fierce between the two countries, Australia and England, and the Vodafone Men's Ashes series is headed our way. One of the most treasured events on the cricketing calendar, and all of the action, the 5 days of the fifth test, will take place right here at Perth Stadium, January 14 to 18. You can soak up that atmosphere just by buying yourself some tickets, and you can grab them via Ticketmaster right now. They're on sale via Ticketmaster. Go there and grab hold of a great deal. We'll be back soon.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and we are a minute away from heading to the 7 o'clock news here on 882 6PR, and we have plenty more sport to update. We'll also do our SKG Radiology Injury Report. They care about your welfare and are now bulk billing. There's a number of players that played last weekend that are not going to be available for their respective teams. As I've forecast a few times, Jake Wetton is going to join us from the Athletes Village over there in Tokyo. Jeremy Sharp will join us from the Gold Coast. He is the Round 18 Rising Star. He's a West Australian, and he's done some great things as a young player too before he's got opportunities. So ask him a couple of questions about that when we get him on the radio. Matt McKeldin for Motorsport. Cam Waters winning the supercar event on the weekend. It was an enthralling battle too with Shane Van Gisbergen towards the end of that race, and something that I spoke about briefly last night. Ask a question of him around Verstappen and also Hamilton and the incident that took place where Verstappen went flying into the fence at about 290 clicks. John Slavich will update to the wonderful world of lawn bowls as we normally do here on a Tuesday night. But the news is next here on 6PR at 7 o'clock.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, drive car of the year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
And we are joined by Peter off the top of this hour, who's out there in High Wycombe. G'day, Pete.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Well.
That's good, mate. A couple of... I was lucky enough to be, many years ago, living in Victoria, and I'm an old bloke, as you could probably tell, I had two classmates that went to the Munich Olympics from a country school, a school in country Victoria there. So one was Clark Roycroft, the famous Roycroft dynasty of equestrian. And he competed with his father, like all his brothers did over the years. His father, I think, went to five Olympics.
Yeah.
Bill Roycroft, legendary. And a great story about Bill was in 1960, I think it was Rome, where he broke his collarbone about a day before the finish of the before they finished the equestrian, and was in hospital, checked himself out, come out and rode with a broken collarbone, and Australia won the gold.
Yeah, and I reckon George Grilicic, from memory, I reckon Pete, and I
called sadly, that.
He called that, didn't he, mate?
Yeah. I think he did too.
Yeah, I reckon he did, that. Mate. I reckon he did. I just remember him calling that particular event, as he did when Carl Lewis won the 100 metres going back to the Olympic Games. I can remember that moment too, mate.
Yeah, well, the other one was Clyde Sefton. He's a cyclist, sensational. He was the first Australian to win a road medal in Munich. He got the silver medal. He come from nowhere and sort of tough as nails. He was a very interesting story about Clyde. When he was an amateur, he won a Melbourne to Colac, I think, 1 week. And then the next week he won the Victorian Boxing Championship, amateur boxing championship. And then the next week he won the Melbourne to Mornewell on the bikes again. So pretty handy. He was an athlete, athletic champion, school footy team, top player. And only a little bloke, skinny but wiry and tough as nails. And he won that event, won the silver medal in Munich. And come back, on the way back from there, he rode in the six-day race in Scotland and won that. And just come back to the farm, as he does, and lives in South Palm Beach, which is about two farms away from where Sean Darcy comes from, would you believe?
Yeah.
And the other little interesting anecdote to that is, 2 years later, when the Christchurch Commonwealth Games trials were on, they were virtually the Australian Championships over here in Perth, and Clyde had an injury at that stage, and he finished fourth and didn't get selected for the Australian team. Anyway, there's a bit of a stink about that, and all of a sudden, one of the guys pulled out, and in went Sefton. He won the gold medal in the road race by 4.5 minutes.
Unbelievable. Good stuff, mate.
That's sticking it up him. And I'll tell you what, mate, he would be a really good bloke to go on your program one night.
Yeah, we'll try and follow him down. Jimmy, can you pick him up and on the back of Pete's story? Thanks for calling through, mate. Really appreciate it. Hey, just quickly for the Bottle-O, got to love your local, got to love the Bottle-O. Some of the bigger news today that's unfolded.
Well, the Adelaide Thunderbirds, the Vixens, the Magpies, the New South Wales Swifts, they've all gone to Brisbane tonight. So it was going to continue in South Australia. That's not the case. The West Coast Fever, they are due to fly out to Brisbane tomorrow. So good luck. There are a few players and staff from Giants and also Adelaide that have been linked to exposure sites in Melbourne. So they may not get there, but that's a bit of an update on the netball.
Yeah, and of course we've got the confirmation that Port will play Collingwood at Marvel Stadium. That was the preferred oval chosen by Port Adelaide to play that game. Great range, friendly service, independently owned by the locals. Gotta love your local, gotta love the Bottle-O. Now, Hayes, for SKG Radiology, who care about our welfare and are now bulk billing Medicare rebatable services across all 20 locations. Before we head to Tokyo, who are some of the keys that are missing this week?
A test for Tom Duday. Lockie Neal hurt his shoulder today. He should be okay. Patrick Cripps is a test, as is Mark Murphy coming back from his calf. Callum Brown out for the season with a shoulder. Josh Thomas, a concussion at Collingwood. At Freo, Darcy and Tabiner a test. Rory Lobb, TBC. He won't be playing. Brandon Ellis, 3 weeks. Lockie Weller a test at the Gold Coast Suns. Toby Green, Matt DeBoer, Matt Flynn, all unavailable this weekend for the Giants. Josh Kelly is a test, as is Lockie Whitfield. James Harms at Melbourne. And for Port Adelaide, Zach Butters and Rosie are a test. Dersma is available after playing in the sample. Dustin Martin, season with his lacerated kidney. Shane Edwards is a test. Camden McIntosh out with his hamstring. Rowan Marshall, of course, won't play for St Kilda. Callum Mills and Cunningham out for Sydney. Josh Kennedy a test. And Luke Shuey will be out 2 weeks, announced tonight. Liberatore, of course, a test for the Bulldogs. And Dunkley, he is out for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, and of course, Matt Crouch, we spoke to Michelangelo Rucci off the top, played a game in the SANFL on the weekend, so hopefully he'll be available. But we're off to Tokyo next. Stay with us here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day, and let's get into our Olympic segment for Australian made. Look for the logo to be sure that it's Aussie. And one logo that we will be looking out for is the Australian colours and logo as we head into the Olympic Games. The opening ceremony is on Friday, and I'm looking forward to seeing as to whether Jake Whetton and our Kookaburras will actually be marching in the opening ceremony. And Jake joins us live from Tokyo. Welcome, mate. How are you going?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Now, do you know as to whether you're going to be allowed to march? Has the decision been made?
Unsure as of yet. Unsure. We haven't had any official word as of yet. We're still waiting to hear from the bosses at the ROC. So as soon as we know, I reckon everyone else will know.
All right. Now, Jake, on the back of a couple of more positive cases in the Olympic Village, which is where I assume we're talking to you from tonight, what are the protocols like?
Yeah, really, really high and really diligent here at the ROC. The Australian Olympic Committee have set some really high standards already for COVID testing and the procedures that we have to go through, sanitizers all throughout our area and all throughout the village. And yeah, mate, it's been done really diligently, and everyone seems to be following protocol here in Australia, the Australian area. And we're doing all the right things to make sure that every athlete here is raring to go on day one of matches.
Now, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to sleep in those cardboard beds yet, but what are they like?
Mate, for myself, weighing about 62.5 kilos, wringing wet, not too bad for me. I don't know how some of the boomers boys will go or some of the weightlifters. I'm unsure how it might handle them, but for myself, mate, I'm sleeping like a baby. It's pretty hot here, so as soon as we get in there, it's head on the pillow, and I've been falling asleep pretty easily.
Jake, how mindful are you of mixing with either other Australian athletes or even athletes from other countries? Just because if, somebody does contract it and you've had contact with them, then that's curtains for your campaign.
Yes, certainly right, mate. We've been addressed by the ROC head doctor, our own Hockey Australia doctors about the procedures, little things like going to the food hall and getting drinks out of vending machines and things like that. Again, like I said before, mate, we've been really diligent in how we approach the situation, and we've taken all procedures to make sure that hopefully we do enough that we don't end up in that situation, and we can just concentrate on our games rather than the virus itself.
Yeah, let's get it onto the pitch because your team, a lot of expectations, been really highly ranked coming into this tournament. But how different has it been in the lead up? Because you've been there, done that before. But the opportunity not to play against too many other international teams in the lead up, of course, would have been significant. You did beat New Zealand 2-0, but has it been very different to what you were used to?
Yeah, certainly, mate. We haven't, like you said, we played New Zealand in 6 games since March of 2020. So we're normally playing 20 to 30 international games a year, so that's essentially 60 games of hockey that we haven't played against the European nations, the other Asian countries that are all highly ranked in world hockey. So for us, it's been certainly different. We've definitely played a lot of intra-squad games, and for now, we're all just looking forward to beating someone else up rather than beating ourselves up at training. So it's been a tough slog, like everyone, I guess, in Australia and for that matter around the world. It's been a difficult period, but we've been able to have a really good training in Perth. We're all based obviously over in Perth, and we've had the 26 extended squad being in Perth for the majority of last year and all of this year. So we've been playing, like I said, a lot of intra-squad games, which become pretty much an international standard game. You think of Australia versus Australia A, which would probably, Australia A would nearly rank inside the top 10 if you put them out onto a hockey field against some other nation. So, we know that, it has been unfortunate we haven't been able to play some of those Euro teams, but it's what we've been able to do. And a positive thing we've been looking at it as well is that they haven't seen what we've been training or playing. So that's something we're going in really confidently with.
Now, you are one of the veterans of this team. You made your debut in 2011 and you've played over 130 times for our Kookaburras, so you're a man that knows your stuff. How do you do, as you've just referred to, some reconnaissance, though, on those teams that you haven't seen? I mean, have you got some people, some spies that have been in place to go and have a look at how they've been operating to bring back some notes? How's that part going to work?
Yeah, very, very good question. Fortunate to that Europe opened a little bit more than what Australia has, and I guess some other countries as well, that they were able to maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago actually play a European Championship, and that was streamed online and on KO for us in Australia, so we were able to watch that, and our video analysis guy was able to cut it all up and work out how they're potentially going to play. So we've had a little bit of time to be able to look at different opposition that we might come up against over here, and which has been, again, good for us. And on the other hand, they haven't seen a whole lot of us. So we've got hopefully a few tricks up our sleeve that they haven't seen, and we get them when it counts.
I know that you've spent time in India in the hockey league there, and you had signed a deal to head, I think, to Holland to play, is this right, as part of their competition? But, of course, when COVID came along, that contract basically got torn up when the Olympic Games got cancelled. So your world got pretty much turned upside down too.
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah, like you said, I'd had in place a contract to go and play in Holland, and it was, going to be my wife and my young family, and we were, again, really looking forward to going over there. But, things obviously changed pretty quickly, and that kind of got put to the back burner. Look, personally, mate, hopefully one day that I can get over there. But, for now, it's all eyes on winning the Olympic gold medal for Australia and for the Kookaburras and the rich history hockey has in Australia.
Who are the teams to beat? Who's been the strongest so far over there in Europe?
Oh, mate, honestly, if you look at the world rankings at the moment, from 1 to 8 on any given day, anyone could win it. We have to be, we're just getting through. We have to get through our pool games, and our first big step is to get into that quarter final. And we could face anyone in that other pool: Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, Great Britain, Canada, South Africa, all in the other pool. So any one of those teams we face, hopefully in a quarter final, we've got to be on from there. And for us, it starts on Saturday 1st against Japan, and hoping to get underway really good.
What about for you, mate? Could this be your last Olympics, or now that the next one's only 3 years away, you happy to push on? Or you love to push on, of course, to Brisbane, but that's probably a bit unlikely.
I don't think I'll make Brisbane somehow. I think if I'm still running around there, hockey might be in a struggling place, which I know it's not. I know it's thriving in Australia, and there's a lot of young, good kids coming through. But yeah, mate, look, I haven't really had any sort of retirement yet. Like you said, the next one's only 3 years away, and within between that, we've got the Commonwealth Games next year, and then our Hockey World Cup in 2023, and then the big one in 2024. So there's a lot to look forward to for hockey and myself personally. But I guess, come back in a bit of a cliche, we're just here to do really well for our country, for Australia, for everyone who supported us over the last kind of 18 months to get to where we are now. We want to repay them with that gold medal coming back.
I'm just looking at the Wetton profile here, and I reckon the only thing that is missing is that Olympic medal and a gold medal. You've got a World Cup gold, Oceania Cup. You've got the Pro League gold. You've got 2 Commonwealth Games gold medals. You've got a couple of Champions Trophy gold medals, a World League gold medal, just not an Olympic gold medal. That'd be nice just to cap it off if it is your last Games.
Yeah, mate, it certainly would be. And for hockey, as an international sport, it's the pinnacle. And I guess growing up and watching the 2004 boys win the Olympic gold medal is a memory that will forever be in my head, in my heart, and hopefully we can do the same to any little boy and girl back home in Australia.
Thanks for joining us, mate. We really appreciate it. Take care of yourself and look forward to seeing you in action against the host country in a couple of days' time. Cheers.
Awesome. Thanks very much for your time, guys.
Jake Whetton, Kookaburra, a Brizzy boy. His home is here in Perth. That's where they have all been based in the lead up to the Olympic Games. Great to have him on the radio from the Athletes Village here on Sports Day tonight. It's important to buy Australian right now. Look out for the Australian-made logo to be sure that it's Aussie. We'll be back with Jeremy Sharp, who is the Round 18 rising star from the Gold Coast Suns.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and one of the players of the round, if you have a look at the rising stars in the AFL, and round 18's rising star is Jeremy Sharp, a West Australian boy, and you select Carcraft, car-craft.com.au, and it's nice to have this man on the radio, Paul Haseby, taken at pick 27 in the 2019 AFL draft. In a live trade with Geelong, where the Gold Coast swapped their future first round selection and pick 64 for pick 27. And it was the second live trade to occur in the AFL. So he goes down in history as one of the very first to go through that process, which must have been weird. But Jeremy Sharp, welcome to the program. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me.
What about reflecting on that moment before we reflect on your great performance on the weekend? In fact, it's been a couple of weeks of good performances from where I've been sitting in my living room watching you play, mate. But going back to that time and going through that process must have been a bit weird, eh?
Yeah, definitely a weird moment. Obviously not knowing when you're going to be called out, but when my name did come out, it's pretty surreal and a moment I won't forget.
How's it been, mate, since getting your opportunity up there in the Gold Coast? And just take us back to, you know, getting to where you've gotten to now.
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah, obviously it's like a similar sort of lifestyle at Perth. So from those sort of things, like it's pretty easy to adapt up here. But yeah, it's been good. I'm loving it. Obviously a pretty young group, being able to gel with them really well and loving what Stewie's doing, all the coaches. So yeah, I can't complain.
And you got the Rising Star nomination this week, and that's six West Australians that have got that so far this year, and four from the Sharks. So clearly there's a pretty good group of young East Fremantle products that have come through.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky enough to be in that team at East Fremantle with all them boys, and it was good fun. We probably all wouldn't have thought this would happen this year and all these accolades and stuff, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, you played, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Sharpie, I think you played the Under-18s Championships 2 years in a row and got on the All-Australian team 2 years in a row. I think not only did you get in 2019, the year got drafted, but didn't you get in it the year before as well?
Yeah.
Right. So, obviously, you were on a pretty good trajectory and it didn't go unnoticed.
Yeah, well, I suppose that was always my goal, to get drafted. But to get those little things along the way definitely helped. But, it was pretty cool.
It's pretty tight, the Rising Star Award this year. Who do you think would be the favourite right now to take it out? Because there's no real standout.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky. I think two of my pretty good mates, or actually probably three of them, Chad Warner, Trent Rivers, and even Mitch Georgiades, they're all going to go pretty close. And probably Luke Jackson as well. Like, probably a toss-up between them four. I think it's pretty hard to tell, but there's going to be some good players that are eligible for it and to win it. But, I don't know. I think Mitch Georgiades is probably my pick.
Nice one. I think you might be right at this point in time, but there's still time for you and others to make their case for this award. But what about this Gold Coast Suns team? Because going back 3 or 4 weeks, we're all talking about this team and whether it had a future in the AFL competition. But the last 3 weeks have been really good, and Stuart Jew's obviously changed a few things up to make that happen.
Yeah, it's been good. Obviously going to Melbourne, not really knowing who we're playing, where we're playing, all of that. Yeah, that unpredictability with the competition at the moment. But to string three pretty good weeks together has been really good. Obviously it's a pretty young team as well, and we're just looking for consistency. And if we're bringing our best each week, we know we can match it with the best. So I think we've put together a good 3 weeks. Hopefully we'll just keep building on that.
You got those two games in your debut season, and they were a fair way apart. And then, obviously, it's taken you a number of weeks to break into the side this year. Round 15 to 18, you've strung four together. What's been the challenge breaking into the side, say, a little bit earlier?
Yeah, I think there's always a challenge trying to get onto an AFL team each weekend. But I suppose just trying to find consistency. I was lucky to be involved in a pretty good comp in the VFL. So, I was working pretty closely with Reece Shaw, my coach, and Brandon Ellis, obviously my mentor as well. So I've been working pretty closely with them too, just to try to keep improving my game and just finding improvement and consistency. I think my stint in the VFL definitely helped me to get back to the AFL. And once I was ready to be picked, I'll probably just stay in the team. So, yeah.
Just from an overall perspective then, do you think that it is actually helped? I mean, obviously there was a separate NEAFL competition and predominantly that was played between the sides in the northern area. So it included GWS and sides out of the Northern Territory and Sydney and Gold Coast and Brizzy. But coming together as a competition, speaking to those probably a bit older than you who had experienced probably a fair bit of that competition, but now being amalgamated as one competition, do you reckon it's made it better overall because you're playing a lot of the, you know, a lot of the VFL clubs these days are AFL alignment clubs?
Yeah, I think it has been better. I have talked to boys that have played in the NEAFL comp before, and they used to just say, like, it was very uneven. Like, the top end was very good, obviously, but then the bottom end was also not as good. So to be in a pretty even, balanced competition in the VFL is, it's been really good to be a part of. And I think it's going to improve young players a lot more and fast-track them to become better players because you're up against, like, seasoned players, hard VFL bodies, so it's good.
What about the last few weeks? Has there been many games played for your reserves team, given what's going on with COVID?
No, it actually hasn't been. So last week, our boys played Sydney Swans just in, like, literally just a scratch match. And then the week before that, we played... I actually don't even think they had a game. Like, it's been pretty up in the air, that comp, because obviously a lot of the teams are in Victoria and they can't fly out at the moment, so... Yeah, I think they're just waiting for the Victorian borders to open back up and hopefully things can get back on.
Now, on the weekend, you had 30 disposals, a really good effort, but Took Miller, he had 38. What a season. He has to be a chance to win the Brownlow medal this year, in my opinion, but what's he like as a teammate?
Yeah, he's as good as he'll come across. He's a superstar. The way he transition runs offensively and defensively, he's a leader. He's just someone you love to cross that white line with each week. He's just a ripper. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the Brownlow or goes close. He's had, obviously an exceptional year and hopefully he keeps going.
I reckon Matt Rowe might win one across his career, but he's been a bit down since he's come back and we have so high expectations on this kid. But how's he tracking? Because he's certainly nowhere near where he was last year before he did get injured.
Yeah, he's tracking well. Obviously, everyone knows he's got high expectations on himself, but... he's doing his thing for the team. Like, all he has to do is just play his trademark game in a way. He doesn't have to have 30 each week. Obviously, he had I think, the first four games or something, he's playing exceptionally well, and everyone knew that. But, I suppose he's come back from two pretty serious injuries, and the way he's carrying himself is really good. And Matty's a good man. He obviously knows he's probably not playing the footy he did in those first four games, but he knows that, like, he's doing his role for the team, and that's him to a T, really, just all about team. So that's good.
What about Brisbane, mate? Q Clash this weekend. They're gettable at the moment. They're not playing great footy.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty tough. I suppose whenever it's Q Clash, it's always good fun. There's always that rivalry there. But, obviously they're in a bit of a slump at the moment, but they're a quality outfit, and I think any team would find them hard on their day. So hopefully we can shake them up a bit and, hopefully get the 4 points.
Thanks very much for joining us, mate. Good luck. Keep up the good work. You've been playing some great footy and we hope to see more of it in the next few weeks. Cheers.
Cheers, boys. Thank you.
Jeremy Sharp from the Gold Coast Suns, the Round 18 rising star, Hayes.
Who do you like, Carl, from here with a rising star? Luke Jackson's up there. Georgiades has been pretty good. There's a few others that have had good seasons, like Chad Warner and the like. But who do you prefer at this particular stage?
Well, I think that there has been one player that has stood tall amongst all
Tom Green?
Others. Nope, it's not Tom Green. It is number 23 that plays
James
for the Melbourne Football Club. Mm. And I think that right now he will be in the lead for the rising star.
Interesting. Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I've got Mitch Georgiades. I just think we need to reward goal kickers. I think he's up to 27 goals now, which is a pretty good performance. Big on the weekend. Look, he's had some down games, but I think we need to start looking at how difficult it is for young forwards to influence games at his age.
Yep, good point, Hayes. And if you'd like to make yours, you can at 133-882. Select Carcraft, performing at the top of motorsport repair since 1987. You visit car-craft.com.au. We'll be back with Matt McKeldin for Motorsport next.
Sports Day for Kia, the Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year, and Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company, Motorsport. That's what we love talking on this night for Tony's Auto Wreckers. Quality spare parts at competitive prices. And Matt McKeldin is the man. He's the expert. And we are going to throw the coins in and he's going to go. And the first coin I'm going to throw in is the back-to-back races up there at Townsville. How do you think in the end, Matty, that it has all panned out? Good evening to you.
Good evening, boys. And let me say that I thought the second of the Townsville races was a much greater spectacle than the first of the Townsville races. The difference being, of course, the first was 250Ks on Saturday, 250Ks on Sunday. Townsville 2 was the sprint format, so we had three races. And I just thought that from an entertainment value point of view, from a racing spectacle and competition on the track, it was a much better round to watch.
There's a bit involved too. The safety car came out in front and Cam Waters and a few others got in front of that and Shane Van Gisbergen had to take some time out, but he did catch up and they went toe-to-toe, didn't they, in the final laps of that contest. And he normally has a great move that he likes to use going into turn 13, but he was right onto it, Cam Waters. He was able to counteract those moves.
Well, if you're going to learn, learn from the best. And Cam did exactly that. You're right, Shane Van Gisbergen does have a bunch of tricks in his bag, and Cam, not only at Townsville this year, but at Bathurst also picked up on a few of those. And he's really on his day when the team is doing well, when Tickford is doing well. Cam is certainly a very strong competitor and can hold it to any of the top four to five guys. The problem is they're inconsistent and they typically don't give him a car that can do it. As example was Townsville 1, where he was P nowhere. But in this one, he won two of the three races. So it was a great comeback from him. I just hope his team can show more consistency throughout the year, because if that sort of inconsistency goes on, when he does come to the driver market at some stage in his career, he would have to be looking elsewhere, because Tickford simply can't give him the buggy to win every week, which is what he needs.
Now, that is a fair effort from Tickford. I know that we had a chat to you about them last week, but first multiple race wins on a weekend since 2015. That's a long time ago.
Long time ago, isn't it? And you know, that leans to exactly what I was just saying about consistency. I mean, if you look at the statistics for DJR and you look at the statistics for Red Bull Ampol Racing, they're nothing like that. And yet these are the two teams that are featured in the championship victories in the last couple of years. So if Tickford's going to do it, whether it be with Cam or whether it be with Courtney or any of the other guys, they're going to have to get more consistent. And we spoke to Tim Edwards about 2 or 3 weeks ago on the driver's seat, and we put the acid on him. We put the blowtorch on him and said, you know, you've got great drivers, you've got great funding, great experience, and yet you simply can't put it together. And he was very candid, and he said, absolutely, we have got to do better. So that'll be one to watch as we head towards the second half of our season, as to whether they can actually do that and give Cam something to compete against DJR and Red Bull Racing.
It was Van Gisbergen's 51st career victory in race 18. Next on the list, Scotty McLaughlin and Garth Tander have won 56 races each, and Van Gisbergen now has a 276-point lead over teammate Jamie Wincup in the championship. You cannot see him getting headed, to be perfectly honest. And do we know exactly where the next race is going to be? Because at the moment, when you have a look at the calendar, the next event's here in Perth, September 11 and 12.
Yeah, good luck with that. it's a great question. And to answer the first part of it, can Shane Van Gisbergen be headed? Yes, he can. But he is 300. He's got to be 300 points ahead in the championship. Once he gets to that, which is a round clear, which I think we said on last week's show, he could sit on the couch drinking pina coladas and he'd still be in the lead of the championship. Once he gets into that position, good luck. But at this stage, he is still able to be caught. As he said in his interviews over the weekend, he could crash the car in any of these races. And if he's not 300 points ahead, then he's likely or could be at least caught. So it's very close. He's 40 points away from that. You'd have to think, if you're a betting man, that you'd be putting the money on Shane Van Gisbergen to take his second championship. Where is the next round? Well, it's scheduled to be here in sunny Queensland at Queensland Raceway later on in August. The place that always said or has said in the last couple of years, we are not going to have a supercars event because it costs too much, has now turned around and reversed that policy, and they will host supercars, hopefully, by at the end of August. So that's the next round, but teams and drivers have returned to Victoria. If Victoria continues to get big cases and continues to lock down, that'll be a concern. But at this stage, it looks as though teams and drivers and personnel will need to come to Queensland 2 weeks before the round. They'll need to essentially self-isolate. And then we'll see them at Queensland Raceway, which will be good because we haven't seen any racing at QR from a supercars point of view for a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's likely to be the same sort of protocol if it does go ahead for the Bunnings Trade Perth Super Night over here at Wanneroo Raceway on that weekend of September 11-12. And then obviously the the big question is that as to whether Bathurst and the Bathurst 1000 can go ahead, because October 7 to 10, who knows what's going to transpire over there in New South Wales, but right now it's still looking very grim.
It's looking terrible, isn't it? And we've said this for the last 2 years, is that you can't plan on anything. We can all talk about scheduling. I mean, me and Steve Johnson and all the TCR guys and TCM guys and Trans Am, we're all meant to race at Morgan Park in just a couple of weeks. That's now being canned as well. So you can schedule it all you like, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's carved in stone. So let's hope that we can be there. At the minimum, I would suggest that at a minimum, it'll be a closed event like it was last year. But Bathurst is, I believe, nothing without the crowds, you know, without the people camping there, the generations of people that have been there. And hopefully we'll see it again this year. Hopefully we can get everything under control, fingers crossed, toes crossed, that we get to have a Bathurst 1000 with a crowd.
Now, last night we had Slaps and Sledges on this program, and I sledged Lewis Hamilton, who took out Max Verstappen. He sent him into the fence at 290 kilometres an hour at the British Grand Prix. Dirty driving, says Max. Hamilton says, I will not be bullied. He, in the end, was only given a 10-second penalty. What did you think? You're the expert.
Okay, probably not going to be a popular viewpoint here, but I think it was a racing incident. Two things there. If Lewis was going to make the apex of the corner to make that pass, it would have been genius. But Max turned in, and he did turn in. He knew that Lewis was there, and they made contact. Now, the biggest issue with it, boys, as we saw, as you rightly point out, was 200 mile an hour, 290 Ks, that he went whistling to the fence, 51 G impact, which is just enormous. And he was very, very lucky to walk out of there. I think it was a bell ringer. He certainly looked like he'd gone a few rounds with Mike Tyson when he tried to get out of the car. He was a little wobbly on his feet. But look, I think it was a racing incident. One of the things I love about this Formula One season, unlike what we've seen in recent times, it's super competitive. We've got a championship. Lewis and Maxi are fighting tooth and nail. And the reality is, Maxi's aggressive. Maxi will stuff a car somewhere where it shouldn't be. And more often than not, most people get out of his way because they know he's coming. Not unlike Shane Van Gisbergen, I might say. Whereas in this instance, Louis went in there, shoved the nose in there. He was just about to make that pass, had a little bit of an understeer, missed the apex, and just clipped Max. Now, could Max have run a little wide to prevent the accident? Yes. Could Lewis have not pushed it in so hard? Yes, but if you look later on in the Grand Prix, Lewis did exactly the same thing to Charles Leclerc from the Ferrari. Charles just went a little bit wider into the corner, lived to fight another day and got a podium for Ferrari. So I think it's a racing incident. I think it's a result of the competitive nature of our championship. What we have seen post that 48 hours after that, that British Grand Prix, is utterly unacceptable that Lewis Hamilton has suffered enormous racial vilification on social media again, which is just appalling, should not be stood for. And what I'm very proud of with Formula One is that both Red Bull and all the teams have put their arms around Lewis and said, forget what happened. This kind of vilification online or in any platform is utterly disgraceful and unacceptable. So, but we've got a championship, boys. And normally I find Formula One a snooze fest. I usually cannot stay up through a race, but right now I'm watching every race with excitement because it's a championship. We've got one finally after about 4 years.
Yeah, 8 points is the difference between Verstappen and Hamilton right now. Mate, we really do appreciate your time. If anyone's looking to buy or sell real estate over there in Queensland, make sure you look up Matty, please. Thank you very much for your time tonight, mate. Take care.
Thank you, legends, and be safe and well over there.
Good on you. Matt McKeldin, he is our motorsport expert, and there you go. He gave his expert opinion right there, and I reckon when you only hand out a 10-second penalty, I think the officials saw it in the same way that Matt did tonight, but he certainly has been given some unfair treatment. Hayes and I spoke about the terrible stuff that's being said on social media, and it's got to stop. If you're in the hunt for quality car parts, you can't go wrong with Tony's Auto Wreckers. We will clear a commitment, come back, and John Slavich will join us. Everything that's happening in the world of lawn bowls. Let's hope the greens are above water. We'll talk to him next.
Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento. Drive Car of the Year. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
We finish off tonight here on Sports Day with Green to Green. Thanks to Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything, and it's great to have one of Western Australia, and Australia, in fact, best lawn bowlers in Johnny Slavich joining us here on the program. John, welcome.
G'day, guys. How are we all doing?
We're going really well. Now, what happened with the PBA and the results over the course of the weekend? Is it done yet?
Look, we're about halfway through the tournament of the PBA. Just to enlighten everyone who listens to the show, the PBA is a professional bowling association which has started in the UK many years ago, and a lot of the top bowlers around the world converge to play in the indoor tournament. As the years have gone past, they've spread over through to a lot of countries around the world, and Australia has been lucky enough to get some qualifications to play in these bigger tournaments. So WA is the leading organisation for the Professional Bowls Association, and we run these events to qualify for the Scottish, the Welsh, the English singles and pairs titles. So over the weekend, we ran two tournaments at the Mandurah Bowling Club, the Scottish and the international singles, and young Ryan Moyle from the W Bowling Club took on Blake Nan in the final and won through on four sets, 8-9, 11-6, 2-1 and 2-1. So now, with obviously COVID permitting, Ryan gets the opportunity to represent Australia and go over to play in Scotland for the Scottish Master Singles. And in the international singles, we got down to the two groups of semi-final qualifying. So we've got two places in WA that get to represent Australia over in for the UK international singles. So we've got Mark Ellis and Lisa Featherby in one semi, Lara Mercer and Paul Sinden in the other. Hopefully one of them can get through to the final. And Kyle McIlroy, Sean O'Brien in the second grouping of semi-finals with Tidler and Hyatt with the second lot. So two more bowlers hopefully getting the opportunity to play on the indoor world stage.
Hey, Johnny, how come bowls isn't at the Olympics? What's the reason?
Look, I think it's one of those events where outside Commonwealth countries, people don't play bowls. So it'd be pretty hard to try and get a bowling green rink, whether it's being artificial or natural grass, just to set up to play in the Olympics. I can imagine at the moment you've got Japan. I couldn't quite see them building a purpose-built green or synthetic green. It costs a lot of money to do just to hold that one event for that one time. So it's generally just a Commonwealth game. That's why it's very prevalent in the Commonwealth areas and why it plays in the Commonwealth game. So look, one day you might see it, but I'd find it pretty hard to get over and play in a country like Japan where they have to build something like that.
Righto. What's coming up? What are the next events?
Yeah, look, we've got Cardinia. We've got the Shots Up Carnival, which is a pretty big event for the Cardinia Bowling Club. That's coming up, and reservations and two tournaments on the 28th of August. And also Sorrento have got their Dash for Cash coming up on the 31st of July, which is a any gender fours, starting at 9:30, $20 per player, and approximately $2,000 in prize money.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been a pleasure having you on the program, and we will have a chat to you next week. Take care.
No worries, guys. Thank you.
John Slavich, who always does a great job with Green to Green and updating us with all of the news in Western Australian bowling scenes. If you would like to find out more, if you go to Bowls WA website, which is very easy to navigate, bowlswa.com.au is where you can find all the info there. For Baron O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. The number here at 6PR is 133 882. Todd Johnson has the night shift. He's coming up next. And from 6 o'clock tomorrow, we Hayes and I will be back to talk everything sport. I'm sure that there will be some new breaking news in this world. The Sydney Swans will hopefully provide us with a very nice guest. We'll chat about our golf. We'll recap the British Open on the weekend, and we'll also talk some waffle on Wednesday. So all of that as part of our program tomorrow night. We'll see you then.